Last kid to cross that line, I had to summon up the zombie takeout monster with my rock and roll magic. Zombie takeout monster grabbed him, pulled him underground, made him eat zombie takeout all day. Welcome to episode 155 of Zombie Takeout,
Zombie Takeout,
the B Movie and Cult Movie Podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, I want to explain the end of last week's episode. That was a joke for Scott and anybody who's seen the movie. There's a scene in the middle of the movie when John walks into the strip club and you hear what you heard at the end of that episode, and it just repeats and repeats, and they use it again at the end of the movie when the cast is all bowing. And hence, it was one of our sponsors last week.
Yeah, we kind of referenced it in the show.
Yeah. Just an explanation for anyone who might have been confused or annoyed by that.
Oh, I can only hope they were annoyed by it.
Oh, also, since this is going out on March 14th, Happy Pi Day.
Oh, yeah.
And just a follow-up to last week, I mentioned I was going to have to rent Elf this week. I rented
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Watched about 30, 40 minutes. Better than average for a Will Ferrell movie. Then I kind of got tired of the one joke and saw the rom-com coming. So I skipped forward to the scenes with Andy Richter and Kyle Gass. Those were a little disappointing. I don't think they gave them quite enough to do. Then I skipped forward to the Peter Dinklage scene. Absolutely worth the price of the rental.
Oh, yeah.
That was the only thing good about that movie.
But Ed Asner and Bob Newhart, man.
They were good in the beginning. Like I said, I did see them in the beginning. Bob Newhart was a nice surprise.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then the one of the best scenes also is Artie Lang.
That's actually about where I checked out.
Oh, man.
I've never been an Artie Lang fan.
The fight scene with Artie Lang.
That's where I started to skip forward.
That's a priceless scene. The line, you smell like beef and cheese, you're not Santa. Oh, wow. That was some great stuff.
Like I said, I just kind of got tired of it. Oh, also, on to some news. Another follow-up to last week. You had said that Evil Dead really couldn't continue with the remake. You had an issue with that?
It's the reboot and the sequels at the same time.
Yeah. Sam Raimi made sure Evil Dead 4 wouldn't be affected by the remake. This is from CinemaBlonde. When asked about the potential future of both branches of the legendary horror franchise, Bruce Campbell, who served as producer on the remake, revealed that Raimi guided the latest movie with a potential Army of Darkness follow-up in mind. He said, "They coexist beautifully. Sam instructed us, don't screw up my ability to make another movie with Ash, so there's no Ash character, there's no Bruce. There's no cameo."
All right.
Basically saying that because Ash doesn't show up, they don't contradict each other. It's not a remake per se. It's a reboot. It's the same thing happening to a completely different group that could be happening at the same time as the remake. Or as the sequels.
I'm talking about for at least the movie going public, though. It's something that will just get lost.
The remake or the sequel?
One of the two would suffer from it, I think. But then again, you see what Star Wars is about to do, and I think they're going to suffer from the same thing too.
The cameos?
Well, they're going to reboot and do sequels at the same time, in a way.
How are they rebooting?
Well, if they do the Han Solo movie.
Well, that's not a reboot. That's just explaining things that we haven't seen before.
Kind of sounds like they're starting a reboot, if you think about it.
In that case, then the prequels are a reboot. It was just showing things that we'd only heard about before. Contradicting themselves in the process, but hopefully they won't do that with the Han Solo, if that goes the way I want it to.
Think about it. If they do a Han Solo movie, a Han Solo prequel, they've got another actor playing the role.
Yeah.
And if it's really successful, wouldn't the next logical thing from, the movie studio point of view, well, let's remake the original trilogy with him.
We speculated that they were going to do that anyway.
Well, yeah.
I don't think that's outside of the realm of possibilities at all.
Just remember when it happens. You've heard it on Zombie Takeout first.
I think we talked about this when we reviewed the originals.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
And mentioned, you know, we'd be ancient curmudgeons about it, you know, back in my day and all that. I think they'll wait till after episode 9 to do that if they're going to.
Well, I think the real deal was when, you know, he sold it for other people to, you know, to make them his movies. You know, it's only a matter of time now before they do remake the original trilogy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And depending on who they get, I'm kind of interested in seeing that, I gotta say.
And Greedo's gonna shoot first. For real this time.
Just getting into... this is a can of worms, but... I watched that clip on YouTube recently.
Really?
Someone was pointing out that we don't know who shot first. And I rewatched that scene. When the shots are fired, you're looking at a cloud of smoke with two laser blasts. You don't see either of them actually fire.
Hmm.
The actual shot, when you see the two blasts, and they're a millisecond apart, you see one then the other in this cloud of smoke. You don't see either of them pull the trigger.
Okay.
So you can't tell who shot first. You could still argue that Han did because it's his character, but it's inconclusive from the movie.
Anyway,
next story.
Yes.
A new horror film is making your cell phone part of the movie. This is also from Cinema Blend. Dutch production company
Bloody Dutch
2C Film, in cooperation with Service 2 Media, created an app for Bobby Bowman's or Borman's App, which is the name of the movie. It's an app for a movie called App, which Variety reports will allow for an interactive experience while watching the film in real time. App tells the story of a young psychology student who finds an app called Isis has appeared on his cell phone, and it begins to terrorize his life. App's app detects the high-pitched watermarking tones in the movie and sends viewers text messages as the main characters get them.
Huh.
As well as reportedly accessing complimentary scenes and information aside from what's being watched. Now, a couple issues with this. I think this is pure gimmick.
Of course. This is, what's that John Goodman movie, Matinee?
This is Smell-O-Vision.
Yes, exactly.
The thing is, there are going to be some people watching the movie in the theater who weren't into it enough to get the app.
Yeah.
And then in the middle of the movie, when the app starts doing its thing and all of these people are picking up their cell phones, it's really going to annoy those people.
Of course.
And also, okay, the text message is kind of interesting for a gimmick. Complimentary scenes and information aside from what's being watched. So you're supposed to be looking at these scenes on your phone while the movie is going on?
I don't get that part either. That just sounds like a bunch of...
Unless that's like a DVD extra that they're putting in the app to watch whenever you want to watch it.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Maybe the texts are probably the only part that's meant to be experienced during the movie. I still think it's going to irritate the hell out of most of the people watching it.
Of course. It's bad enough people, you know, leave their cell phones on in a movie as it is.
Yeah.
To have that as part of the movie, it's going to suck.
This is why Smell-O-Vision never took off. And that was far more creative.
Of course. I mean, that was something that came out of the screen, you know? It was a part of the theater experience.
Look up Pink Flamingos if you've never heard of Smell-O-Vision. And just look up Pink Flamingos. We need to review that someday. If
yeah, we do.
Can, you know, brace our stomachs enough.
I've actually had a number of, you know, theatrical experiences where they deal with the sense of smell.
Oh, okay.
You know, where they're, you know, cooking something on a campfire on stage and that you can kind of smell the food cooking, that sort of thing.
Did it add anything?
Made the audience hungry.
That's about it, yeah. It didn't really make it anything more immersive.
No, I'm talking about an actual, you know, play at the live production.
Oh, at a live show. Oh, yeah, because it's actually being cooked on stage, so you're
getting
smell, right?
I mean, they probably really weren't cooking it on stage. I don't know what they were using to waft a scent out, but it just made the audience hungry, really.
Yeah. And making people read texts while they're paying attention to a movie, probably a bad idea. You're asking people to be distracted during your movie.
Yeah.
I think this will go down as one of the worst ideas. Like Smell-O-Vision, it'll be one of those horrible idea gimmicks. Anyway, on to this week's movie, speaking of gimmicks. It is from 1998, Six String Samurai. And of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary. Sponsored by every post-apocalyptic desert movie ever made. They're all pretty much the same.
And also sponsored by the Spinach Monster. Oh, if only. If only. All right, we have a Buddy Holly lookalike gentleman wandering the desert in what else but his suit. He is, of course, the samurai in question there. And he, of course, plays the guitar, hence the six-string part.
Mm-hmm.
And he is wandering on his way to Vegas. This is an alternate timeline, I should explain first, of course. And they lay this out in the beginning quite brilliantly, really. It only took like 30 seconds to lay down this exposition of an alternate timeline of, well, Russia invaded in 57.
Nuked us, basically.
Yeah, nuclear war broke out. And, well, the U.S. is kind of in pieces. The head of it, of course, is, get ready for this, Lost Vegas. But
actually, the Russians took over the U.S. except for Lost Vegas. That is the only free part of the country left.
Which is incredibly ironic, because would that not be the easiest part of this country to take over? It has no water supply of its own.
It's surrounded by desert, very open, completely unprotected.
Think about that.
And it's just tourists and people looking to gamble.
Yeah, you'd love to see them try to take over, like, the Florida Everglades and the swamp people out of Louisiana. Yeah. Good luck there, buddy.
Any part of Texas.
Yeah, Texas, of course. And, you know, the crazies up in Idaho and Montana and whatnot. But yeah, Vegas, that stands. No water supply of its own. Anyway.
Did you mention Elvis?
What's that?
Did you mention Elvis?
Well, yes. I was just getting that. Of course, the ruler of Lost Vegas is the king, who, of course, Elvis. Mm-hmm. And he's lived to the ripe old age of, well, I guess to 1997, which I don't know how old that would make him. Which, honestly, wouldn't he just go back to where he came from in the future instead of...
Of course.
Oh, I'm thinking of another movie. But, yes, he has just died, and they're looking to crown a new king. And, of course, the six-string samurai, our buddy Holly, is ready to go and take his place. But, however, there is another claim to the throne.
Actually, several.
Well, yeah, other people are trying to claim the throne, but there is really one legitimate claim to the throne, and that is Death, who I'm not sure if he was Al Jurgensen or Slash.
Slash.
But, yeah, I think Slash.
Jurgensen would have been a little too obscure.
Yeah, but wouldn't he make a great king?
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, he is determined to take the throne, and... they wander around, and if I were to just say hilarity ensues and end it right here, this would probably be a fucking awesome movie.
Yeah.
But there's a detail that I had left out that I don't know if I really want to talk about.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this one.
The six-string samurai is not alone.
Oh, yes, yes.
The six-string samurai has a companion.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about you, but throughout the entire film, I was rooting for said companion to meet an untimely death.
Think Newt from Aliens or Tina Majorino's character in Waterworld, but a million times more annoying.
But alas... He never died.
Mm-mm, quite the contrary.
Never got left behind. And, yeah, then hilarity ensues.
Now, I mentioned in the pre-show, I have probably my most ridiculous nitpick of all time with this movie.
Right, I
I'm just
gotta
gonna
hear
put it out
this.
right now.
If you're really hyping up a nitpick that much, you've had a lot of nitpicks
Yeah.
over time.
Normally they're scientific based and they're, things that wouldn't really work in reality.
Yeah.
And there's some basis for them. Some of the audience knows this. I'm a guitar player.
Oh, yeah.
I'm also a bit of a music geek.
And a sword junkie, too, right?
Well, I'll get to that.
Okay.
Because that was awesome.
Yeah.
But, okay, Buddy in the movie is supposed to be Buddy Holly.
Right.
Buddy Holly very famously played a Stratocaster. Buddy in the
Oh,
movie is
yeah.
walking around with a Gretsch. I'm not sure of the model offhand.
Yeah.
Death is supposed to be Slash. Slash very famously played a Gibson Les Paul.
Right.
Death has a Fender Stratocaster. Now, okay, the Gretsch was a hollow body, it was a lot thicker than a Stratocaster, and the sword was attached to the back of it. Maybe it would have been too close to the neck for him to actually play it. You can move it. Be accurate with the right guitars if they're trying to be these specific people. My most ridiculous nitpick of all time.
I would forgive any nitpick if someone were to just shove something into that kid's face to shut him up.
He didn't bother me that much until the scene where Buddy was trying to make him laugh so he would stop crying.
And that is just an awful scene.
Yeah, and mind you, folks, that is about 10, 20 minutes into the movie.
Yeah.
It's very early. And then, okay, they establish he can talk at some point,
Yeah.
and yet he still continues to do the, just grunting sounds.
Right.
Once you've
And
established that he can talk, have him talk.
they were trying to do the kid from the Road Warrior,
I
obviously.
forgot about him. He was the obvious one.
Yeah. They were trying to do that, but that kid wasn't annoying. That kid, you know what? I haven't seen that movie in a long time, but I remember that kid being pretty convincing as a feral kid, you know?
Yeah.
This kid, the only, where did I put my notes? Oh, it's somewhere in my notes. I believe we owe Jake Lloyd an apology.
Yes. And every other kid actor we've bagged on.
Then there was somebody in one of the IMDb things where that was complaining about the kid also, and someone actually put, I guess you haven't seen the Star Wars prequels then, huh? And I was there thinking, I would trade for him in a heartbeat. Are you
Oh, yeah.
kidding?
Jake Lloyd was far more tolerable than this kid.
Jesus, he makes Jake Lloyd look like Olivier.
Yeah.
Whose kid was he that he, I mean, to give a major role like that too in the film, it's just nuts.
And you mentioned the Road Warrior, and this really speaks to my big issue with the movie. Because from the trailer and the IMDb summary, which I, of course, read before I watched it, I always
This is
do
the
that.
first movie I had to see the trailer because you were asking me last night about, it did it live up to the trailer. So I was thinking, what was the trailer like? So I had to see it, of course. They just mentioned the kid in as kind of like a side thing.
Right. And they pretty much took all the best parts. It's a trailer, that's what they do.
Yeah.
But based on the trailer and the plot summary, I loved this movie. I thought it was an easy five.
I thought so too.
Equal parts Mad Max and Troma. Some reason vaguely reminiscent of Buckaroo Banzai for me, I'm not sure why.
Oh yeah, definitely. I could see that.
This was a thing of beauty. And then I watched it.
This has, you know what? Superlative here. This has to be the most disappointing movie we've done.
Yeah.
I mean, because we've come into movies, we've been like, oh God, this is gonna suck, and they've surprised us very pleasantly on some
Absolutely.
occasions. And sometimes we just know a movie's going to be shit and it lives up to shit.
Right, we're prepared.
This movie, they lay out that exposition of this great, alternate timeline. It's a fucking samurai movie. What more do you really need?
Samurai with music.
And it's really, what's that movie that like The Rock did, with like it
Yeah.
was really like the Tooth Fairy or something.
Well, the
Oh.
big problem I have with it, because the kid irritated you more than me. I mean, it was a little irritating for me.
Yeah.
The big issue I have, it was just so bloody formulaic.
Yeah.
It was every post-apocalyptic desert movie you've ever seen with a musical skin.
Now, they were claiming that they were parodying the movies, the post-apocalyptic movies. And, you know, they even had like a Clint Eastwood kind of how he fits into a post-apocalyptic movie. I don't know. They were going for the spaghetti western angle of that.
And the cannibal family was kind of a trauma, very trauma.
Yeah.
Probably the only part I really enjoyed.
Well, it was kind of, and I think it's the deeper flaw of the movie, is that it was too cartoonish.
Yes.
And the cannibal.
And I like cartoonish.
And some people are going, yeah, this would make an, it would have been an awesome anime film, you know, and it's because it's the Family Guy factor. When something's animated, it doesn't have to have a quality script. It just kind of has to be there. But if you,
the standards are lower, there is animation out there that that is of that quality.
Oh, of course. Yeah, there is quality animation out there, but I'm just talking
about. But it can
about,
get away with a lot less, you're right.
Right. The expectation is way lowered for when a movie is animated from live action. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem here, and the cannibal family wasn't as bad as, say, I don't know, the cavemen or whatever, that were pretty much just ooga boogieing it up while chasing after them while he did the short round thing in the car.
And that had to be the most ridiculously slow car chase ever filmed.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe that was a joke that went over, you know, I didn't quite pick up on, but they were literally doing about 20 miles an hour.
Yeah. I think that was part of the parody.
Didn't play that way.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is it either was too cartoonish or not cartoonish enough. You know, it either should have been more serious and, you know, more intense, or just go straight broad over the top Zucker Brothers.
What's wrong with taking the timeline they had, though? I mean, that's a pretty kick-ass concept.
Oh, I love the concept.
Post-apocalyptic America, and you're fighting your way across, and, you know.
But I'm saying the humor should have been broader to really hit home the parody, or you tone down the parody and you play it straighter. It would have been better either way.
And the other thing I saw online, a lot of people were really praising the cinematography of this, which, it was good, yes. But we've seen it in the movies that they're parodying.
Yes.
Didn't really need to see it again. You know, we've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly in this, in the scenes through the desert and stuff. You know, it wasn't original cinematography that was good about it. It was stuff that they've taken from other films.
Yeah. Okay, now another ridiculous nitpick. The opening theme music. Kind of a surf guitar thing. When they're showing Buddy Holly, 50s icon.
Yeah.
It was this whole surf thing, very reminiscent of the theme from Psycho Beach Party.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Seemed a little out of place.
The appearance of the Red Elvises themselves, I thought kind of broke the spell a bit, too. That was kind of the first indication that the movie was going to. I was like, wow, this is going to be awesome. And then, like, well, here's the band that we're just, you know, talking about. I was kind of like, ooh, well, that's not a really good sign.
Now, I liked their music, but yes,
yeah, oh yeah, me too.
In the movie itself was,
yeah, that was
a little
pretty
unnecessary.
Bad. I mean, they had the whole nice shoes bit going, and it was kind of, oh, I could see, you know, but you know,
yeah, the pin pal scene was kind of where it started to fall down for me. Although I did like the knife in the bowling pin.
Oh,
that was a very creative prop. But the acting in that scene was trauma level. And up until then, actually, I gotta say, Jeffrey Falcon, who played Buddy.
Yeah.
Good actor for a martial artist.
Yeah.
He did all of his own stunts, no wires or anything.
Right.
And surprisingly good actor. It looks like he actually plays guitar, you know, or that, or he had an exceptional tutor. But when they got to that pin pal scene, the acting went down, and that's really where I kind of started to smell every, you know, like I keep saying, every post-apocalyptic desert movie he ever made.
But honestly, if they had kept it in that vein, I would not have had much of a problem with the movie. You know? If they were kind of doing a Warriors thing,
It
which.
did remind me a lot of the Warriors.
And yeah, because it's almost exactly the same plot. He
Yeah.
has to make it from, like, how, I think it was 18
Yeah.
miles to get to where he needs to go.
And they had the Wolfman Jack impersonator on the radio playing the part of the DJ in the Warriors.
And I swear to God, you really need to listen to it's probably one of the best parts of the movie is the stuff he sang on the radio. Because I swear he's giving one of Cyrus's speeches
I gotta pay more attention to that.
on one of his breaks.
Oh wow.
I heard some Can You Dig It's and stuff, you
Oh
know?
wow. Okay, that's impressive. And I liked the Wolfman Jack nod at first, but it did get a little old, much like the DJ in The Warriors gets old. Now
Okay,
this
let's
was
get to it,
made.
boppers. Okay, let's get to it, boppers.
Now this was made on a budget of $2 million, but it only made a little under 125 grand back.
Someone pocketed a lot of money.
Yeah, because this does not look like a $2 million movie.
No, it does not.
You could make this with maybe twice Primer's budget. You could
Yeah.
probably make this for 15 to 20 grand.
Well, it was in color, so I would go with like 50 probably.
Okay, fair. And it was 98, so it was actually shot on film.
Yeah.
Today, it would be much cheaper, of course.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, if you're doing it today in video, yeah, what the hell?
But even considering that, maybe 75 grand.
Yeah.
I was shocked when I saw the number before I saw the movie, and I kept looking back at it while watching the movie. Just, I could not believe it. Also, it was filmed only on weekends because Justin Maguire, the kid, still had to go to school.
Who did his parents have pictures of the producers or something in with farm animals? I mean, what the fuck? Why this kid? Why?
Friend of the someone on the production, I'm guessing, or
I don't
maybe there
know.
were pictures. See, the kid again, irritating, but there are much larger issues with the movie for me.
Yeah, but he was a main character.
True, true.
He's pretty much the second bill in the movie, you know?
Second or third, if you could consider Death the second.
Nah, Death wasn't even in it long that as long as he was.
That's true, that's true.
The kid is
Yeah.
star number co-star of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And that's oof,
Yeah.
that's an awful lot to let ride on your film on. And they deserve to lose their money if they lost it to go with this kid and put it through that, you know?
Another issue, this was made in 98, 4 years after Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
They used Miserlou.
Of course.
At the same time, everyone was using Miserlou.
Yeah.
Granted, it's kind of the period, but pick another Dick Dale song. You don't need to use the one that everybody used.
Well, I think it goes back to what you're saying. It doesn't really, it's not really Buddy Holly's time.
Well, that's also, yeah, Miserlou was 60s.
The
Dick Dale was
surf
in the
rock,
60s, yeah.
the whole surf rock thing
And his little duel with Death at the end was, his part of it was surf rock.
was past Buddy Holly's time.
Although, I have maintained this, and I'm a bit of a Buddy Holly fan, because
Yeah.
I think he was about 10 years ahead of his time.
Yeah.
He pretty much invented surf rock.
Okay.
The stuff his drummer was doing was surf rock. A lot of his music, it heavily influenced surf rock. It was kind of the foundation of what became surf rock. But this was straight up surf rock,
Yeah.
which was after his time.
And of course, in this alternate timeline here, there's apparently no music between rockabilly or
And heavy
surf
metal.
rock and metal.
Yeah.
You know what would have been great if there was an invasion from the British
Yeah,
that
there should have been.
dethroned Elvis.
There should have been a reference to the Beatles or the British invasion in general. Because there, you have Ritchie Valens at one point, you have mariachis, you have hip hop. You don't have the artists who effectively dethroned the king, the
Well,
Beatles.
Ritchie Valens went down with Buddy Holly.
Well, no, but you don't have the Beatles, who effectively dethroned the King.
Yeah.
You don't have Michael Jackson, who dethroned the Beatles. You don't have these icons referenced, other than Buddy Holly and Slash, which I guess if you're gonna pick an iconic heavy metal guitar player, granted Guns N' Roses were more hard rock than heavy metal, but in that same vein.
And by 98, they were pretty much done.
But they were still iconic.
Yeah.
You know, if you're thinking heavy metal guitar player, most people are going to think Slash.
But you're talking...
I think Tony Iommi would have been a better choice, but...
Or even Eddie.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, yeah, also...
At least his guitar, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's properly a heavy metal guitarist. Yeah. And just as iconic, if not more so. But image-wise, I can see why Slash.
Or he is Darth Vader from the planet Vulcan.
You know, but Slash had that, you know, the top hat and the leather and the dark image. So I get it. But there should have been other icons referenced.
Yeah.
Maybe have someone, you know, one of Death's side men have this, you know, guitar with the white stripes on it.
And to reference Eddie. Speaking of Death's henchmen, why did they sound like E.T.?
Didn't think about E.T., yeah. To me, it just kind of came off as random demon voices, but it was kind of E.T.
All the bad guys had random cartoonish voices.
Yeah, yeah.
That really just annoyed more than anything else, you know?
I just kind of ignored it. By the time they showed up in the movie, I'd pretty much written it off.
It was kind of an episode of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, only with a Buddy Holly impersonator. That's really the summary of the movie, and a whiny kid.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. And again, just have dressed them up as various musical icons, and yeah.
I mean...
And his henchmen were all stormtroopers.
Yeah, oh my god.
He was literally... There were three of them with bows and arrows. He was literally walking toward them maybe 10 feet away. Nothing was hitting him.
It was, yeah. The dodging arrows was ridiculous, too.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, another... pet peeve this movie really, you know. Do you think there's someone out there who has not seen Return of the Jedi who those lines might have been new to that they were using?
Which I didn't catch a Jedi reference.
Almost every line Death had, actually.
Oh,
was a line.
From the Emperor. A lot of them were very Emperor, yeah.
Yeah.
Very Palpatine. I mean,
verbatim.
Yeah.
He, like, wasn't even, like, a nod. It was just a, I'm going to take this script and I'm going to use these lines.
Mm.
I don't know if that's supposed to be a joke or if it's just supposed to be lazy.
Yeah. I think they were trying to be arch and evil and probably lazy by referencing Jedi specifically.
Yeah.
And just having a villain that arch, I mean, it worked for the Emperor, but you can't go that arch after Palpatine, because it's going to look like Palpatine.
Taking the lines verbatim?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't care if you go arch with it. What the hell? I mean,
it's
better than the Ooga Booga or what, yeah. Stuff for the cavemen, yeah, yeah. And whatnot. And the craziness from the cannibal family. But to just take lines from another movie and just like, oh yeah, it's a parody. Don't have to write any dialogue of my own. I can just take lines from Return of the Jedi and The Wizard of Oz. Well, of course, Wizard of Oz really was parody.
Yeah, this was very Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
You know, he interacts with a little person who tells him to follow the Yellow Brick Road to Las Vegas. When you see Las Vegas, it looks exactly like the Emerald City. Death is obsessed with getting a specific object, his guitar pick.
Yeah.
And there's a few other things that we won't spoil at the end. Because I don't think we need to spoil the ending.
No, we don't.
Not that I don't think we'll be, and either of us will be recommending the movie, but no.
Nah.
We'll leave that. Oh, just one more little nitpick. Not even a nitpick, just an annoyance before we move on.
Okay.
The guitar duel with Death at the end.
Yeah.
There was some nice playing. I enjoyed it on that level, but it really was no better than a dance-off.
Nah.
Or the it very much kind of reminded me of the walk off in Zoolander, but if they took it seriously,
yeah, they literally did not have patience to execute, and that was kind of the story of the movie, you know.
It's just Laziness.
Yeah.
Is really what this boils down to. Alright, on to sequels and remakes. An intended trilogy has been discussed, but not yet realized.
Wonder why. They lost, like, what, 1.9 million on it?
Yeah, about that.
Good luck getting someone to invest in your next movie.
Uh-huh. Directors made several music videos, but didn't direct another feature until 2005's The Crow Wicked Prayer.
And that's another quality franchise, too, isn't it?
Now, I know a lot of people who love The Crow, the first one. I'm not crazy about it, but I'll show it respect. But none of the sequels, nothing that came after The Crow, was any good. In September 1998, a six-string samurai comic was released from Rob Liefeld's Awesome Entertainment. And yeah, I'm not even going to bother reading the rest of that. They did a comic book. It is a slight variation on the movie.
So, for the love of God, somebody that knows what they're doing, come and remake this film.
I was just going there.
Please, please.
And I know who needs to remake it.
Please, with sugar and a motherfucking cherry on top, remake this goddamn film.
I know who needs to remake it.
Take your pick. M. Night Shyamalan, for fuck's sake. Anybody.
Tarantino.
Yeah.
He can go completely insane, over the top with it. Incredible amounts of gore, which it should have had.
Right.
He is a music geek, so he can really get, you know, accurate about that stuff. I'm seeing a cameo from Isaac Hayes.
Or just reset the warriors in the desert. I mean, you know.
But I think this concept in Tarantino's hands will be what it could have been.
Yeah. And I mean, other, you know, gangs trying to come in would be representative of other bands, Zeppelin. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah. Please, Zeppelin should have been referenced.
You get, like, Bowie in there, you know, you get some other proghead or, you know, there could be so much cool shit. The new wave.
And think of what Tarantino would do with the fight scenes.
Yeah.
Which is really the best part of the movie. I mean, Falcon is a good martial artist. He was fun to watch.
And just get Al Jurgensen to play the king, or death.
I was thinking about that, because that's the... I was thinking about the remake before we started recording. I couldn't find a death, because, you know, Slash is a little outdated.
Yeah.
Jurgensen's kind of obscure, but he is really the only guy I can think of.
Yes. You'd not require any makeup.
That too.
You just show up to the set. And there you go.
I can't think of another guitarist who is iommi heavy metal other than Tony Iommi, and he's a little too obscure.
Yeah.
I can't think of anybody better known than Slash, but Jurgensen really would be perfect.
Yes.
And it would modernize it, because it's industrial, not hard rock.
Right.
That would work. And Al Jurgensen in a Tarantino movie.
Yes, that would be... sign me up.
Yeah. Mr. Tarantino, if you're listening, please
don't
remake
sue
this.
Us first. We love you, and then remake this.
That's a TAS reference for those who didn't get it.
I thought there's out there enough.
Just to clarify, but for anyone who hasn't gone through that, all right, on to brains.
Yes, on to brains.
You've actually talked me down quite a bit.
Oh yeah.
I was very torn on my rating for this movie. Because I really wanted to love it. But you've talked me down quite a bit. I'm not even going to say what I was going to say, what I was going to give it, because that'll just embarrass me. Because, like I said, I was really trying to be nice, but I got to go too.
That's exactly where I'm at. This is a great concept.
Mm-hmm.
There were some really good fight scenes. Some absurd fight scenes.
Yeah, yeah.
The rest was just handled abysmally, worst child actor ever, and just too many leftover villains from the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
And too formulaic, and too many gaps in music history.
Terrible fucking ending, too. Two brains.
Yeah. All right, what have we learned?
That it is time for the percolator. That would be, if I were making the movie, that's who death would be. The percolator.
Side note, after we recorded last week, I hunted the song down on YouTube. That is the only lyric in the entire damn song.
Of course.
And it's like 5 minutes long. Anyway, on to what I learned, aside from that.
Okay.
I learned that I need to combine my swords and my guitars, because I have quite a few of both. Because that was just awesome.
Yeah.
And I also learned that I need to listen to more Red Elvises. Seriously, I've kind of fallen in love with them after seeing this movie. That's the big takeaway here. It's the Red Elvises are awesome. All right, so until next week, when we'll be concluding our Vegas trilogy with Mars Attacks, go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course, the episode itself, which you're already listening to. Links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Google Plus. Links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. You also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review. Not in order anymore. We have to talk about that
Yeah.
because we've hit the end of the what we've planned out.
Well,
You
there's a
also
big
find the
plus
request.
after next week.
Well, yeah, after next week.
Yeah.
Also, the request form, if you've got a movie you'd like to hear us review, leave it on the request form. Yes, after the trilogy, we will be getting to a request. And, of course, the recommendations list, which I'll just say I came with in a hair's breadth of putting this on. I wanted to like it that much.
I did too. I really did. The kid that played Boba Fett ruined it.
Actually, he was a rock star compared to this kid.
I
Because
know.
he was better than Jake Lloyd,
Yeah.
and he's continued to do Boba Fett's voice on the in the Clone Wars, and it's actually been pretty good. Back to the outro. You can also send us an email, zombietakeout@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-ZT01, or for the alphanumerical challenge, 414-368-9861. So until then, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you
There
are.
you are.
Well, what are you waiting for?
So until next week, when we'll be continue. Well,
Concluding.
until next week, we'll need. I can't talk for now for some reason. Suddenly.